Chapter 10. A couple of days later, with Sally and the airship long gone, the family were invited to a barn dance. This was to be held in an open space down by the creek that wound its way around the hill where the gondola sat, and, as decided at the last minute, a couple of steps east, as the weather was a little better there that evening. Of course they would have accepted, even if it hadn't turned out that the event was being mounted in their honour. Somewhat nervously, Agnes got herself ready for the evening. Before their journey out here, before they'd been discharged from the Black Corporation laboratories for the last time, Agnes had had her ambulant body set to look as if she was around her middle 50s, a few years younger, apparently, than Lobsang, and a mere 40 years or so younger than her calendar age. Well, 50s was an age she'd lived through once already. She knew how to make the best of her greying hair, and she'd packed a decent gingham dress that she knew would suit her on the night. Lobsang, meanwhile, wore a loud checked shirt, jeans, and cowboy boots, and little Ben was kitted out in a scale model of exactly the same gear. The outfit wasn't going to last. He'd grow out of it in a few months, but Sally had suggested packing it to make a first impression on just such an occasion as this. So, prepared, they joined their neighbours. The barn dance turned out to be just what Agnes would have expected. This field by the stream, roughly cleared and fenced off, was evidently intended for sheep, and Agnes saw a small flock in a pen not far away. Now, in the gathering twilight, the open space was lit by burning brands that gave off a tar-like smell. There was a ribald caller, with a couple of fiddlers standing on crates pumping out the music, and the people, maybe 50 in all, men, women and kids, lined up and whirled around. It was a scene Agnes imagined you could have seen anywhere in rural America back on the datum for decades, if not centuries. The difference here was the in-case-of-emergency stepper boxes that bounced on people's hips as they danced. There was a bar at one end of the field where you could fill up on the juice of some unidentifiable citrus, or water, or on quite good homebrew beer. There were even a few bottles of whiskey. A barbecue sizzled and popped, but the food on the grill was mostly unfamiliar to Agnes. Strips of red meat, presumably from the little local mammals they called furballs, and one monster of a drumstick that must have come from one of the local big birds, there more for show than for eating. It would probably take all night to cook a joint the size of a whole turkey. And there were oat flour cookies and slices of pumpkin. A few dogs ran around yapping or begging for food scraps. Shimi, naturally enough, was nowhere to be seen. Soon they were grabbed by their new neighbours and pulled into the dance. Agnes had been to enough dances in her misspent youth to have the general idea, but she found herself having to learn new steps rapidly as she went along. Lobsang seemed to be struggling more than she was, and once even tripped over his feet and landed on the deck, only to be picked up again by his neighbours, laughing. In the heat, noise and laughter, Agnes quickly tired, or rather emotionless software in her gel-filled head, ran programs to simulate tiredness, triggered fake sweat glands, and made her mechanical lungs pump harder at the warm air. She tried to embrace the feeling, and put aside the fact that she was basically living out a lie before these evidently good people. When she took a break, Lobsang joined her by the rough-and-ready bar. He said, sipping a whiskey, "I will always regret that I now have conscious control over my degree of drunkenness, and we could have been better prepared for this. We spent 9 years training to be pioneers. We should have just downloaded a barn-dancing application." Agnes snorted. "Where's the fun in that? Or the authenticity? You're a city boy come to learn the ways of the country, Lob... George. Get used to it. Enjoy." "Yes, but..." He was interrupted, grabbed at the elbows by two burly middle-aged women who hauled him back into the line. A smiling woman, dark, 40-ish, approached Agnes with a fresh cup of lemonade.
"Sorry about that. We always seem to be short of men at these dances. And Bella and Meg can be a little boisterous when there's fresh meat around. like big birds on the prowl.
Fresh meat? George will be flattered. Nothing fresh about us, I'm afraid.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. You're making a fine impression.
She stuck out her hand to shake.
I am Marina Irwin. My husband Oliver is out there somewhere.
Irwin? Oh, it's your boy who's babysitting for us tonight. Nikos?
That's right. For a suitable fee, I'm sure. Quite the capitalist, my Nikos, for a 12-year-old boy who's grown up out in the green.
It's kind of him to miss the dance for us.
Well, it was a sacrifice for him. But give him another year, and we won't be able to prize him away from the girls.
Maybe, Agnes thought doubtfully. She had met rather a lot of 12-year-old boys during her years in the home in Madison, and Nikos struck her immediately as a decent enough kid. But a kid with a secret, a big one, an observation that had nagged at her since she'd met him. Marina was still talking.
I wouldn't object if you gave him some work on your farmstead, by the way. It would be good for him to have some experience of that. Not many of us farm anymore.
Agnes pointed.
Sheep over there? Sure, we keep sheep mostly for the wool.
And she smoothed her own dress, which Agnes saw in the uncertain light was knitted, and tinted a pleasant apple green, presumably by some vegetable dye.
All you get from the local furballs, the forest animals, are scraps of skin. The feathers from the big birds are more useful, actually.
Her voice had a pleasant lilt, Mediterranean, perhaps Greek, Agnes thought.
We do raise some crops, mostly potatoes, for the stepper boxes, and for emergency food reserves, though this world is so clement, we rarely need to dig into those.
Though even as she said that, the breeze picked up again, and Marina pushed loose hair from her forehead with a puzzled frown. She went on,
The first people here intended to go in for farming. They cleared the forest, marked out fields, the works. The old barrow place up on Manning Hill that you've taken over. That was one of them, as you'll have guessed. And the old Poulsen house is another. You know, the swap house, our local haunted house. My Nikos spends half his life in there. I think it is a kind of clubhouse for him and his buddies. He'll grow out of that.
Agnes prompted,
But the farming didn't stick? No. Now there's a bunch of us spread out over the stepwise worlds. We do have homes, you see, but they're scattered around, seasonal. We work together to maintain the farms for the sheep, the potatoes, a few chickens and such. And we have a kind of rota for when to meet up for events like this. The rest of the time we just wander. We're not combers, by the way. Oliver takes offense if you call him that.
I get it. Just an easier life than farming.
Well, that's the idea. These worlds are so rich. Why do our kids need to break their backs behind a plow? But, she said hastily, what we choose isn't for everybody. And it's not to say you won't make a go of your farm if that's what you want. To each his own.
That's a good philosophy.
I mean, you'll fit right in. If you do grow wheat and stuff, we'll be happy to trade for it.
Marina sipped her lemonade.
And that little boy of yours looks like he'll grow up big and strong, like his father?
Agnes suppressed a smile. The probe couldn't have been less subtle.
I'm sure you've heard this already. Ben's not ours. He's adopted. I did hear something. People gossip, you know. But I didn't want to go supposing about something you might not want to tell me about. It's best to be open.
And Agnes felt a stab of Catholic conscience, even as those words emerged from her own disguised ambulant unit artificial mouth.
His real name's Ogilvy, by the way, just in case something happens to us and he ever needs to know.
Marina nodded.
I understand. I'll remember. Ben lost his parents early. They were both workers on a beanstalk, a space elevator, you know, on Earth West 17.
They were in a kind of mobile workshop outside the atmosphere. There was a leak, a decompression, the kind of accident that would have been entirely impossible a generation ago, if you think about it. Their little boy ended up in a kid's home where I used to work. But George and I were already looking to come out to a place like this, and it turned out that Ben's parents had been planning to save their money and leave their jobs behind and strike out on their own, in the same kind of way. And we thought, why not give Ben the life his parents intended for him? So we applied for adoption. And Lobsang, behind the scenes, in the final stages of their desperate wait, had bent a whole slew of rules, while Agnes had gone through agonies of doubt about whether she, a robot, could be a fit and suitable mother surrogate for a 3-year-old boy.
"Well, here you are," Marina said.
She clinked her lemonade glass against Agnes's.
"And I, for one, am glad to meet you. I'm sure you'll get along fine, all three of you."
"Four, including the cat," Agnes said with a smile.
"Thank you, Marina. Listen, we have an Easter egg hunt. Dawn, the day after tomorrow."
"An Easter egg hunt?"
"Just what we call it. And I know it's not Easter. Come along and see. Now then, we can't let those men of ours have all the fun out there."